inside the hall to a minimum, doing our best to perhaps watching the kids. I know it's difficult, but to the best of our ability, inshallah. You guys with me, inshallah? Thank you. We talked about balance in our last session and the importance of living a balanced life and not falling into extremes. And one area that has been taught to us in terms of our balance is dealing with the dunya and the akhirat. There are some misconceptions out there amongst all of you and the youth about how Islam views this world and how Islam views the hereafter. So the first thing I'm going to ask, and I'm going to throw a question out there for all of you, is when I say the word dunya, what does that mean to all of you? The world, okay? What else? Sorry? Temporary, okay? What else? You think of dunya, guys. What do you guys think about? Materialistic. Good. What else? Imperfect. What about the akhirat? When I say akhirat, what does that mean to all of you? Yes. Day of judgment, okay? Yes. The afterlife, okay? What else? More important than the dunya? Okay. Eternity. Yes, sister? Journey. Okay. My elders in the audience, when I say the word dunya, what do you guys think about? Is what? Lowly. Okay. Is it a physical world? Is planet Earth the dunya? Yes? No? What about akhirat? When I say akhirat, what does that mean to all of you? Grave and barzakh and heaven and hell and all that? Yeah? Okay. It's important that you guys understand that the dunya and the akhirat is not about physical worlds. If you guys get this session, I'll be very happy. So I need you guys to focus on that. Okay? No one is forcing you to be here. If you guys aren't feeling it, then you guys can leave, and I promise you I won't get sensitive about it. No worries. If there's one person in front of me and that one person is with me, then inshallah I'm very happy. The misconception is this, that you guys have heard in speeches that Amir al-Mu'mineen has divorced the dunya. That Amir al-Mu'mineen says that the snot of an animal is worth more to me than the dunya is. That you've heard that, you know, when he used to tie his rope around his shoes to keep them on his foot, he would say that rope is worth more to me than the dunya is. And so the youth now think and believe that Islam wants me to have a zero relationship with the dunya. It wants me to live a poverty-stricken life. It wants me to wear patched-up clothing. It wants me to drive a clunker for a car. It wants me to live in a shack of a house. And that's what the dunya is all about. And we do all of that because we think the akhirat is what our goal is. And it is our goal. But that's our misconception. And I'm here to clear up that misconception. The dunya is very important to us. Without it, we can't survive. That's why when our eighth imam says this dunya is a bridge, and you don't build homes on bridges. This dunya is a bridge, and you don't build homes on bridges. Meaning what? That while the dunya doesn't have the ability to host a house on it, it's very important to transport goods from one area to another. I want you to imagine, if you want to cross, let's say, a very high cliffy area, and there's a bridge, and you get across that bridge, if that bridge, God forbid, halfway through collapses and fails, then you cannot get to your destination. While the bridge is very, very important, it's not your destination. It is a means for your destination, but it holds immense value to it. That's why we see in one tradition, Amir al-Mu'mineen curses the dunya, and somewhere else in Nahj al-Balagha, he praises the dunya. He says the dunya is that place where Allah chose to reveal His words through revelation in this world. Worship is done in this world. You attain Allah's mercy in this world. You gain heaven in this world. This world is very, very important. So don't let anybody ever make you guys believe that Islam wants this poverty, grief, stressful life for all of you. Islam wants you to enjoy this dunya. Islam wants you to work very hard. Islam wants you to be educated and to do everything halal. And if that requires, or that means that you have a nice fat salary, then so be it. Enjoy it. Where Islam draws the line is when there is attachment to those things in this world. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that I made this entire universe for you, mankind, and I made you for me. The reality is that I would love to come back here in this community 20 years from now and see all of you guys pulling up in nice, sweet rides, living in beautiful homes. And when you invite me over for dinner, inshallah, and I walk into your house, I'm like, damn, that's a nice house you live in. Why? Because you worked hard becoming a surgeon, becoming a lawyer, becoming an accountant, becoming a business person, whatever the case may be, a teacher, a principal, a professor, whatever the case may be, you did it because you did it the halal way. Enjoy it. But when it comes time for you to place a value on those things, do not overprice them in this world. When it's time for you to detach yourself from everything around you, you can walk away without any problems. Live in this world, live in this dunya, but don't allow the dunya to live inside of you. Okay? Do not allow anyone to sit there and tell you that you can't be pious and rich at the exact same time. Not true. That's a misconception, right? We always hear that the people who flocked towards the Prophet's message were those who were poor individuals. And the moment that one of our people get a little bit more money, we look down on that person. And yes, I'm not saying that there hasn't been individuals in history in the Prophet's time and in our communities who, you know, they got a little bit extra coin and all of a sudden the first thing that's gone is their connection to the deen. That's been there. It will always be there. But it doesn't mean that Islam doesn't allow you to be somebody who's successful materialistically. The problem is that we attach ourselves to these things in this world. Have you ever seen someone who's lost their phone? Can you imagine losing your phone? Oh my God, everything is in my phone. Every photo I have, every notes I have, every contact. Our memory is out the window. We don't have a single number memorized. It's all in my phone. Okay? So when we talk about balancing in this material world, it's not this idea that Islam wants you to hide off in a corner on a prayer mat, tasbih in your hand, and just rocking back and forth, saying, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And the world's passing you by. Not at all. We don't need that right now. We need professionals in our community. We need you guys to represent our faith in the hospitals, in the accounting firms, in the lawyers' offices, in the courtrooms. We need that. In the media outlets. We need that desperately. And with that profession comes a good salary. Enjoy it. It's your world, man. Live it up. But don't attach yourself to it. When it comes time for you to detach, you walk away. There are people in this world that when Malak al-Maut, when the angel of death comes and takes their soul away, there are people who simply exhale and their soul is separated from their body. Then there are those that the books tell us that it's like ripping a sheet off of a thorn bush. clutching itself to every single thorn. Because it's attached itself to that bush so much that now when it's time to separate from that bush, it simply doesn't want to let go. That's why the discussion on death is one that we shiver and we hide from. We can't even mention death in our own house. Our moms get really upset. Because death to us is the ending of life. Death is a creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, guys. And every creation of Allah is pure in its essence. خلق الموت والحياة, Surah Mulk says. Allah created death and then created life. Anyways, but the point I'm trying to make is this. It's a very important one. Is that we need you to strive to be professionals. Successful individuals. If you are a business-minded individual, run a nice, successful business. But do it under the laws of the fiqh. Do it under the laws of Islam. Okay? The delicate balance. Imam Sadiq says, one who leaves aside his worldly affairs for the religion is not amongst us. One who leaves aside his worldly affairs for his religion is not amongst us, nor is one who leaves aside his religion for his worldly affairs. We had prophets of Allah who were kings of their time. We had imams who used to be individuals who would gift the individuals pearls and diamonds and rubies. Give yourself from the dunya what you long from those pleasures which are halal, as long as you're not excessive. There's no israf happening here. And be present where you have been prohibited and absent where you have been commanded. Now, I don't want to go off on tangent, and I have about 25 minutes. This thing called perfection. We have been created to be perfect individuals. One statement. You guys should all understand that. We have been created with the potential to be perfect individuals. Perfection is relative. It's not absolute. My perfection and your perfection is different. Like I mentioned in the previous session, these things are relevant, relative. They're not absolute. Okay? Part of the process was for us to spend 9 months or 8 months in the womb of our mother. That was part of the perfection process. We got what we wanted from that womb and we exited that womb. And then we entered this world. And the next stage of perfection began. We got exactly what we wanted from this world. Everything we wanted from this world, and when we leave this world, we enter the next realm. And that's another stage in our perfection. To go through that barzakh world, and then end up on the Day of Judgment. This world is necessary in order to achieve perfection. I mean, look at the way he's praising this world, Amir al-Mu'mineen. The material world is the marketplace of the special friends of Allah, the awliya of Allah. Whoever uses this dunya as a means of perceiving the reality of what lies beyond this world will grant him basirat, insight. But then of course, there are those who get sucked into the world. There are those who attach themselves to the world. There are those that Amir al-Mu'mineen says, who have placed a higher price on these things around him than heaven. Because that's exactly what they're giving up. Luqman says, the world is a deep ocean and many are those who have drowned in it. So take as your ship faith in Allah and your provision to be the taqwa of Allah. What he means by drowning is the idea of using this world to rebel against Allah. Look at this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful dua by a fourth imam. I ask you for the best of provision, the best of risk, with which I can take care of all of my needs. and use as a means of arriving at you in this world and hereafter, without my becoming excessively affluent, such that I use it to rebel, nor excessively needy, such that I despair. I want enough risk, Allah, that I don't rebel against you. I don't complain to you. I don't say, look, you gave this person that, you gave that person this, you gave me nothing. Nor do I want the idea of so much or so less that I begin to have hopelessness. That maybe my destiny is to be a poor individual, hand to mouth, always fighting to pay my bills, etc., etc. Ask your parents why they made that difficult migration from Afghanistan, from Iran, from Iraq, from Pakistan to this country. They were happy where they were, I think. That was their culture, that was their language, that was their place. All their friends were there, their family was there. They left it, and they came here. They have no idea what the language was, no idea what the culture was. Working odd jobs, security, flea market stalls, taxi driving, whatever they could do to feed you guys. And if you ask them why, it's to give you guys a better future. And look at the states of these countries right now. My father migrated from Pakistan in 1972, I believe. In 1972, he migrated from Pakistan to Toronto. And had he not done that, I would have been fighting for my life right now in Karachi. Where my mom would say khilafis to me for Salat al-Jummah, not knowing if I'll come back alive or not. And my dad delivered mail, my dad worked overnight security, he had a flea market stall on the weekends, he worked 7 days a week, all of it, so I can be a person who's educated. And I let him down, unfortunately. Think about these things. The opportunity you guys have is unlimited. And there has to be a portion for you to thank your parents for that sacrifice. They had no reason to leave the comforts of their country, but they did it for us. Now, the difficult part in this process is good wealth, is permissible wealth. And we believe as long as I pay out khums, everything is okay. It's not that simple, unfortunately. We have issues in our communities about career selection. You guys, I don't know what level you guys are in at school. There'll come a time where you have a very difficult decision to make, to see what career path I want to take. There are some career paths that Islam doesn't allow. There are some maraji that don't allow, for example, you to be a criminal lawyer, or make it very difficult for you to be a criminal lawyer. Why? Because you're asked to basically defend a criminal, sometimes lie, sometimes tweak the evidence, sometimes try to convince the jury of something that's not real. That stuff is problematic in Islam. We have individuals I know in communities, males who are gynecologists, for example. It's problematic in Islam. As an Islamic male, you can't be delivering babies, I'm sorry. There was a choice you made when you had the 1,001 fields of medicine to choose this one. Why you chose that one? I have no idea. These are all things that are problematic. If you run a business and you lie and you cheat and you overcharge your customers, what you gain from that might be a massive sweet profit. Problematic in Islam. There are rules in terms of tijarat and business. It's not as simple as making a good profit, however you want to do it. Lie and cheat and steal and step on people's toes, whatever the case may be. You pay out khums, it's all good, it's all halal. It's not that simple, I'm sorry. That's why Imam Salih says, the one who is on the path of this idea of halal risk is kal mujahid fi sabilillah. It's like somebody who is in the maidan of the war. Somebody who is on the battlefield. It's not easy, especially in this part of the world, where sometimes you have to, you know, present yourself to be somebody you're not. Sometimes you have to lie just to make ends meet sometimes. Be careful of that. Again, bad wealth we talked about. The importance of striving to acquire halal wealth. One thing I love about the American youth is that you guys are focused on education. I wish the Canadian youth, where I come from, were more focused than you guys are. A lot of you, by the time you're in grade 9, grade 10, know exactly what you guys are going to be after university. You know what schools to apply for. You know what programs to go into. You know all of this stuff already. And that's great. I think that's important that your parents instill that inside of you. There are some sins that cannot be atoned for through prayers or charity, but can only be atoned for through serious efforts put forth in seeking a halal livelihood. Can you imagine? The efforts that you guys are putting forward for a halal livelihood can be a reason why your sins are forgiven. That's how much important this is. Our fifth imam, a very famous story. He was farming one day. One of his companions came and said, "Ya Abdul Rasulullah, you're an imam, you're farming, I don't understand. Shouldn't you be in the masjid reading du'as or reading salat or something? You're farming." He says, "I want Allah to understand I'm striving for my risk, even though I don't need it. I'm striving for my risk." Poverty is not desirable. Imam Ali, he married his wife when he says, "I did not have anything but a bed, but today I have wealth such that if I were to divide it over all the Bani Hashim, it would suffice them." If you hear about the idea of him patching up his clothing, if you hear about the idea of him wearing ripped clothing, it's not out of necessity, guys. He chose that lifestyle as the leader of the time. In fact, we have tradition to say that there was a man who approached Amir al-Mu'mineen and he had patches all over his shirt and his pants. And the Imam says, "What are you doing? What are you wearing?" He says, "I'm trying to be one of your Shias, Amir al-Mu'mineen. I want to be just like you, Amir al-Mu'mineen." And the tradition said that he got upset at the man. So God gave you risk, God gave you livelihood, God gave you this amount of risk, and you're thanking him by dressing like this? If I'm dressed this way, it's because I have a responsibility as the imam of the time to make sure that even the lowest individual looks at me and says, "At least I'm not like Amir al-Mu'mineen who wears ripped up clothing and patched up shoes." I have another responsibility. Your responsibility is to thank Allah for my risk by using it. We need clean, crisp Muslims out there in the workforce. Best dressed. You know, you guys have all the tied up hijabs going, you have 40 pins in it, everything. That's what we need. That's what we need. The Ahlul Bayt were not always poor. The state of poverty is close to being a state of kufr. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, "If poverty was an embodiment of an individual, I would have killed that individual." Please, I want to make sure this gets drilled inside of your head. Islam doesn't want you to walk the line of poverty. Islam wants you to be very successful, but don't attach yourself to that wealth. When it comes time for you to walk away, you walk away. Desiring wealth is commendable. Look at these du'as. This one we already went through. "How hard should I work, Imam Sadiq? If people had everything already at their disposal, life would no longer be satisfying or pleasurable." There is a certain lizzat, a certain pleasure we have when we work hard, and then that bi-weekly check goes into my account, and we see our account balance change. Oh man, there's nothing sweeter sometimes. Or when your boss says, "You know what, you worked hard during these months, this is your bonus." And that feeling comes from the fact that I earned this with my own two hands. The Ahlul Bayt worked. They would, you know, our prophets were shepherds. You know the story of why our holy prophet was known as Amin? Does anybody know where that laqab came from, Muhammad Amin? No? Anybody? No? Okay. Our prophet was a shepherd. He took care of sheep. And that was one of the more promising and rewarding professions back then. But what people will do is this. You guys are all with me? Let's refresh the gathering with one salawat, please. Allah Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Oh. 10 minutes and I'm done, inshallah. What the shepherds of the time would do is this. They would take a sheep from an individual, a nice, healthy, fat sheep, and they would take that and they would kill the sheep and they would feed their family with the sheep of somebody else. And when the owner of the sheep would come and collect his sheep, the shepherd would say, look, the wolf ate your sheep, I'm sorry. The Prophet of Allah would take sheep that were purposely weak and skinny and no use to the owner. He would feed that sheep, he would nurture that sheep, he'd make that sheep nice and strong and big, and he would give that sheep back to the owner in a better state than he received it. And never once do we have anything to do with the idea that he would, God forbid, strip that person from that sheep. Based on that alone, he was known as Muhammad al-Amin. And this laqab, this title of Amin, was so strong that his arch enemy Abu Sufyan is quoted by saying that I would love to topple Muhammad's movement, but I can't. I've never heard a single lie out of his mouth. How can I prove to the people of Medina and Mecca that what he's saying now is a lie? I can't. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Again, hard work. We're talking about hard work. It's pleasurable. It can help an individual society in achieving perfection. It's good as long as one does not become occupied from it. Like I mentioned in the very first session, we're trying to establish our business. We spend 15 hours a day doing that. Our wife is mad at us. Our kids are mad at us. Our communities, God is mad at us. Everyone is mad at us. Meanwhile, we're building our empire. There has to be a balance there. When you get your first million at 35, 40, you're a millionaire. But at what cost? At what cost? You've neglected your spouse. Your kids have no idea who you are. Your community has no idea who you are. God wonders where you went. All of that for what? A couple extra zeros in your account? Let's think about these things. Being focused at work can result in big gains with minimal effort. And then of course comes the idea of sadaqah, of charity. Allah has placed the daily sustenance of the poor in the excess wealth of the wealthy. Allah has placed, look at that statement, Allah has placed the daily risk of the poor inside the excess wealth of the wealthy. A poor person will only go hungry when a wealthy person holds back from giving. And Allah will ask you regarding that. You know, one point I want to make here about charity, it's a very important point. And I don't mean to sway off my topic, but there's so much to say in this first day. We believe that we've done our part if we're, let's say, in, I don't know, downtown Atlanta, we're going to the big aquarium, or, you know, the Braves game is going on, the Falcons are playing, and we see a guy outside that has, you know, need change or need help, or he's got a guitar going, and he's got a little hat, and we drop, let's say, a $1 bill, and you feel great about yourself because I've helped the poor, and you move on. That's not sadaqah in Islam. It's not charity in Islam. The essence of charity is this, that there are people in our community who are struggling financially. And they're doing it quietly, without anybody knowing it. Because they don't publicize the fact that, look, I can barely make mortgage payments, I can barely feed my family. They're striving hard, they're looking for jobs anywhere they can, but they are struggling individuals. As a community, it's up to us to find these people, seek them out, and then help them. And that's charity. Giving a dollar bill to a person playing guitar downtown is not charity. Finding a person in our community who, out of reliance of God, is not publicizing his struggles and helping that person is charity. Amir al-Mu'mineen would describe the Prophet of Allah as a roaming physician, guys. A roaming physician. You have doctors today that wait for the sick to come to them, tell them their symptoms, and they write their prescription. Khalas, khudafis. The Prophet of Allah would seek out those who he thought were sick or in need, and help those individuals. I don't know how many guys or how many people you know who might be your siblings, your relatives, your friends, who are in desperate need of your help. Instead of waiting for them to call you and say, look, can you help me? Go and offer your help. This is what charity is. Not just based on wealth or writing a check, let's say, but this idea of helping that individual as well, inshallah. Talk about spending. Let's leave that for, I don't think you guys have any problems in spending. Oh, the third, you know, the third bullet, that's for our husbands in the audience, inshallah. Whoever enters the market and buys a gift and takes it home to his dependents, it's as if he has taken charity to needy people. Buy your wife a gift once in a while, guys. Once in a while. It wouldn't hurt you to stop over and just buy one flower, one carnation, you know? Don't wait for a birthday or anniversary, you know, out of the blue, just a random Wednesday. You see how your life will change inside your house. Balance and sleep. Let's leave that one for now, inshallah. Are there any questions? I know a lot was said. But it's important, like I said, for you guys to understand this balance between the dunya and the akhirat. One tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen, a very famous one. Recite one salawat to Zala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Amir al-Mu'mineen says to live for this world as if you are to live for 100 years. At the same time, live for the akhirat as if you are to die tomorrow. It's a balance, right? We're talking about balancing your time. Strive for this dunya. Strive to be successful in this world. But keep in mind that your existence is in the hereafter. You were not created for 65, 70, 75 years of this world. You were created for an eternity. This world cannot offer you an eternity. What it can offer you is a bridge, is a transient world for the next one as well. But do give this world its proper due and respect. Taqiba is right. Dunya comes from the Arabic danaya, which means low, past, insignificant. But that's in relation to all the other worlds that exist out there. What we don't understand is that the world, this world is the lowest form of the worlds out there. When we die, when we leave this world, we actually go up one notch to a world where there is no veils of time or space or anything, and we can see everything very openly. But we don't realize that reality. That's why we fear death. We see death as the end of life. It's not. It is a intiqal. It's a transfer to another world. So please, like I said, 20 years from now, when I come with my cane or my wheelchair and you see more whites in my beard, I want to see you guys successful. I want to see you guys who are individuals who are driving nice cars, who have a role out there, who are representing the deen out there in hospitals as surgeons, or in accounting firms as CAs, or in law firms as lawyers, whatever the case may be. That's what we need. But when it comes time for you to walk away from all of that wealth that you have built, you walk away without any hesitation. That's what a zahid and a zahida is. Somebody who doesn't attach themselves to that that's around them, inshallah. If there are questions, the floor is open from anybody, the parents or the kids. Just wanna.
In your previous section, you talked a little bit about finding what it is, kind of just narrow down to how one can figure that out. I know it's a pretty loaded question, but
yeah, no, it's a good question. What Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants from you will change as your life progresses, number one. Of course, there are some basic ones that all of you know, and you know, you being the older group, I don't want to sit there and babysit you and tell you what you already know. There are certain obligations on us that need to be fulfilled in terms of our fiqh. But you have to look at your surroundings, number one, and where you are. A person being raised, let's say, I don't know, in Kabul, Afghanistan, has a certain responsibility. A person in Atlanta, Georgia, has another responsibility towards Allah and His deen. How you identify what that process is you have to do a lot of introspection. That's one thing that we don't do. We don't think enough. I don't know what it is about this society that does that tells you, you know, to not think. You know, their ultimate form of punishment before death row is solitary confinement. Right? To be alone with yourself. That's punishment to these people. That's a form of worship in Islam. Our seventh Imam is going into prison in solitary confinement and he's praising Allah. Allah, I found the ultimate source of worship for you, alone in complete privacy. And so it's important that you guys do a little bit of introspection. You know, think about your origin, think about your purpose, think about your destination. All these things are very, very important. And in that, you'll find what your responsibility is. What you can't do is you can't compare responsibilities. Like right now, there are people in Syria on the front lines who are defending, let's say, those muqamim al-qaddisat right now, with their physical bodies. You can't compare yourself to that individual. Part of the process of identifying the responsibility is your role with the religion of Islam. For example, if you are somebody, and it's the example I give all the time. I was in New Jersey a couple of years back, and I met a very young individual who had just passed his bar exam. And he told me his motivation in becoming a lawyer was to fight those cases that go unheard of. I don't know if you heard about this case in New York, guys, a couple of years back. There was a Muslim woman driving in New York wearing hijab, and she had her kid in the back. And the car stopped at a red light, and some guy came and either kicked or punched through the window her face or attacked her physically because she's wearing hijab. When she complained to the cops, nothing was done. He says, my motivation is to defend people like that in the court system. My motivation is to represent Muslims who otherwise wouldn't get proper defense in the courtroom system. So now he's taking his livelihood to be a service of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's fulfilling a responsibility. That's why the Holy Prophet says to Abu Dhar, everything that you do, Abu Dhar, attach a niyyah to it. Even when you sleep, attach a niyyah to it. So your sleep becomes worship. So identifying your responsibility is to Islamicize everything around you in your life. So now you're waking up, you're getting ready, you have your coffee, you're on your way to work, and that 9-to-5 job now is you fulfilling your responsibility. Right? We have sisters in my community in Toronto who are out there trying to become nurses and doctors because they want to make sure that if there aren't enough female doctors right now in our communities. And sometimes you guys are stuck with sharing your information with male doctors that sometimes is very private. And you'd feel a lot better if there was a female in front of you, even better if there was a muhajjaba in front of you, a person wearing hijab. So only to fulfill that gap that we have in our communities are people now going out there and becoming doctors, our sisters. It's commendable, it's remarkable. It's fulfilling a responsibility for Allah. So you have to identify that. How can I help the cause of Allah? What can I do? What can I do? You know, I often say this, and I'll say this here, and then we'll end, inshallah, because it's almost time for the other program. You know, we hear about the Imam coming, and Imam Zaman's occultation, and Ghaybat, and all that, and we keep hearing about 313, and all these, you know, these great numbers, and strive to be 313, and all this kind of stuff. I always say this, I'll say it 1,000 times. I know that I can't be part of that 313 group. That's a khas special group, let them be their special group. I just want to do something in this world where when the Imam comes, guys, he'll look at me and say, you know what, Asad, I can use you in my army. Come and, you know, mop the floor. Can you serve food to the guys who are actually doing something? Can you clean the toilets, make their bed? Whatever the case, I'll do whatever you want, Imam. I just want to be able to be attached to your movement. So when people look at me and say, you know what, see this guy, Asad, this big tall guy, he's actually attached to the Imam's movement. That's all I want. That's all I want. I don't want anything else. I don't want 313. I don't want to be a special commander in his army. I just want to have some nisbat, some connection with the imam. Do something in your life where the imam will look at you and say, you know what? I can use this sister in my army. And that's fulfilling your responsibility. Now what that is, that's up to you. If that's raising great kids as parents, then mashallah, that's fantastic. If it's marrying the proper person because they'll bring you towards Jannah, then that's fantastic. Whatever the case may be, do something in your life that you can present it to the imam of your time. This is what I can serve for you during your mission. This is how I can help you. Just please make me part of your mission. That's all. Any more questions? No? Like Torab said, and I'll say it again, I am here all day tomorrow. I'm in the city until Monday afternoon. If you guys have any issues, any questions, whatever, in any topic, you have my email address, I'd be honored to hear from any of you about any issues. I'll do my best to help you if I can. If I don't have the answer, I'll find the answer. If it's of a personal nature, whatever the case may be, please. Whatever I can do to help you guys, I will. I know it's difficult out there. I know what you guys are going through is very, very hard. I've been through it. I'm still going through it. So you don't have to go through it alone. You can talk to people who have been through what you're going through already. It might make it a little bit more bearable, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, inshallah.